Welcome back, everyone, for another deep dive.
Yeah.
Today, we're going to be talking about something that's super important for anyone who's interested in voting rights and redistricting.
Definitely.
It's a case called Johnson v. DeGrande, decided by the Supreme Court back in 1994.
Yeah, it's a big one.
So for all you law students out there, this is one you really need to know. And luckily, we have our expert here to break it all down for us.
Absolutely happy to be here.
So let's jump right in.
Sounds good.
Can you start by just giving us, like, the big picture? What's the core issue at the heart of this case?
Sure thing. So at its core, DeGrande is all about this tension that comes up when we're trying to draw electoral districts that are fair to minority voters.
Right. And that's a really tough balance to strike.
It is. It is. You've got this question of, like, okay, do we just need to make sure the number of districts where minorities are the majority, you know, those majority minority districts, do we just need to make sure those kind of match up with the percentage of minority voters in the overall population?
Right. Like proportional representation.
Exactly. But then you have this other argument that says, no, the Voting Rights Act actually pushes us to go further to maximize the number of those majority-minority districts whenever it's possible.
So it's not just about reflecting the demographics. It's about creating as many of these districts as you can.
Yeah, that's the debate. And DeGrande really stepped in and said, hey, here's how we need to think about this.
Okay, fascinating.
So
to understand how they got there, let's back up a bit. What was the specific situation that led to this case ending up in front of the Supreme Court?
So this case came out of Florida. They were redrawing their state legislative districts like everyone does after the census.
Right, 1990 census.
Right. And Dade County, Florida was kind of the center of the controversy. Hispanic voters made up a big chunk of the population there, like half the voting age population.
Wow, that's a significant portion.
It is. So when Florida drew the new lines, they ended up with 18 House districts in Dade County.
18 for the House.
Yep. And out of those 18, 9 of them had a Hispanic supermajority, meaning way more than half the voters in those districts were Hispanic.
Okay, and what about the Senate?
For the Senate, there were 5 districts that included parts of Dade County.
Okay.
And of those 5, 3 had Hispanic supermajorities and 1 had an African-American majority.
So it sounds like, at least on the surface, they were creating a decent number of minority-majority districts.
Yeah, you would think so, right. But that's where the legal challenge comes in. The Department of Justice, along with some Hispanic voters, they filed a lawsuit.
And what was their argument?
Their argument was that even though Florida had created some minority-majority districts, they weren't doing enough. They were saying, hey, you could draw these lines in a way that creates even more of these districts, particularly in the House. And by not doing that, you're diluting the power of Hispanic voters.
Diluting meaning?
Meaning it's making it harder for them to elect the candidates they really want, even with those districts they've already got.
Gotcha. So it wasn't just about the numbers. It was about whether those numbers actually translated into real political power.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And the district court actually agreed with them, at least partially. They said, yeah, there's vote dilution going on in the House plan, but they didn't find the same problem with the Senate plan.
Okay, so we've got a split decision.
Yeah.
Which makes sense why it went up to the Supreme Court.
Right, because now the big question is, what does the law actually require? Do states have to create the maximum possible number of these districts, or is it more complicated than that?
And that's the million-dollar question.
It is.
So how did the Supreme Court answer that question? Did they say states have to maximize these majority-minority districts?
No, they didn't. They said, no, you don't have to maximize. Justice Souter wrote the majority opinion, and he was very clear about that, Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. He said it doesn't require states to draw districts in a way that creates the absolute most minority-majority districts possible.
Okay, so that's a pretty big deal. It's not just about hitting some magic number.
Nope. It's more nuanced than that.
So if maximizing isn't the be-all, end-all, what do the courts say, Section 2 actually guarantees?
They said what Section 2 really guarantees is equal political opportunity for minority voters.
Equal political opportunity.
Yeah, that means making sure minority voters have a fair chance to elect their candidates of choice. But it doesn't necessarily mean they have to be proportionally represented in every single legislative body.
And it certainly doesn't mean twisting the district lines into crazy shapes just to squeeze out one more majority-minority district.
Exactly. It's about fairness and opportunity, not just about raw numbers.
Makes sense. So how did that apply to the specific facts of this case in Florida?
Well, the Supreme Court looked at what Florida had done, and they said, okay, the House plan, it actually does a pretty good job of reflecting the Hispanic population in Dade County. You've got 9 Hispanic majority districts out of 18, and Hispanics make up about 50% of the population there. So that's pretty proportional.
So they reversed the lower court's decision on the House plan?
They did. They said there's no vote dilution happening there because the plan basically reflects the demographics.
And what about the Senate plan?
The Senate plan also showed proportionality. So the court upheld the lower court's ruling on that one. No vote dilution there either.
Okay, so proportionality seems like it played a big role in the court's thinking.
It did. It's not the only factor, but it's a really important one.
So what were some of the other legal principles that the court considered?
One of the key concepts here is this idea of the totality of circumstances.
Test.
Totality of circumstances. What does that mean?
Basically, it means when a court is trying to figure out if a redistricting plan violates the Voting Rights Act, they can't just look at the number of majority-minority districts. They have to consider all sorts of things, like the history of discrimination in that area, whether voting is racially polarized, how much access minority voters actually have to the political process. So it's a much broader analysis than just counting districts.
Right. It's about looking at the whole context and making sure minority voters have a real voice.
And the district court in this case, they got in trouble for not doing that.
Yeah. The Supreme Court said they basically made the mistake of thinking that if you don't create the maximum possible number of majority-minority districts, then you automatically have vote dilution. And that's just not true.
Because there might be other factors at play that show minority voters are actually doing okay.
Exactly.
So proportionality, it's important, but it's not the only thing.
Right. It's a good sign that a plan is fair, but it doesn't automatically mean everything is perfect.
It's not like a get-out-of-jail-free card.
Exactly. You still have to look at the whole picture.
And now I know there were some other opinions, in this case, concurrences and dissents, that added some different perspectives. What can you tell us about those?
Yeah, absolutely. So Justice O'Connor, she wrote a concurrence specifically to talk about this thing called the Rooker-Feldman Doctrine.
Okay, and for those of us who haven't memorized every single legal doctrine, what is that?
Well, basically, it's this rule that says federal courts usually can't step in and review decisions that have already been made by state courts, you know, to avoid conflicts between the different court systems.
Makes sense.
But in this case, Justice O'Connor said, hey, Rooker-Feldman doesn't apply here because the people who filed the lawsuit in federal court, they weren't involved in the state court cases about redistricting. So the federal court could hear their claims.
So it was a question of who the parties were and whether they had already had their say in state court.
Right.
And what about Justice Kennedy? He often had some interesting thoughts on these sorts of issues.
He did. He wrote a concurrence that was all about the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment.
Ah, the Equal Protection Clause.
Yep. He was basically saying, look, we have to be careful when we're drawing districts based on race, because the Equal Protection Clause says you can't discriminate against people based on their race.
So he's raising a flag about the potential constitutional issues with going too far and trying to create minority-majority districts.
Exactly. He's saying, yeah, the Voting Rights Act is important, but we can't forget about the Constitution either.
That's a really important point.
Yeah.
It's all about finding that balance.
It is a balancing act for sure.
And what about Justice Thomas? He often had a very distinct view on these matters.
He did. He wrote a dissenting opinion where he basically said, look, Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, it shouldn't even apply to redistricting at all.
Wow, that's a pretty strong stance.
It is. He argued that Section 2 was really meant to address specific voting practices like literacy tests or poll taxes, not the broader issue of how districts are drawn.
Interesting. So he's taking issue with the whole idea of using Section 2 in this context.
Exactly. And that's a debate that continues to this day. There are still people who argue that Section 2 shouldn't be used in redistricting cases.
Okay, so a lot of different perspectives at play here. But zooming out a bit, what's the big takeaway from DeGrande? Why is it such an important case even all these years later?
Well, I think the biggest legacy of DeGrande is that it really clarified how we should think about the Voting Rights Act when it comes to redistricting. It said proportionality matters a lot. It's a really important factor in showing whether a plan is fair to minority voters. But it also said there's no requirement to maximize the number of majority-minority districts.
So it's not just about creating as many of those districts as possible.
Nope. And that's a really important distinction because it means courts have to take a broader view. They have to look at all the circumstances, not just the numbers.
And has DeGrande had an impact on more recent cases about voting rights?
Definitely. Mm. Even though the legal landscape has shifted in some ways with cases like Shelby County v. Holder, the core principles from DeGrande are still relevant. Courts are still grappling with these questions of what constitutes equal opportunity and whether a redistricting plan actually gives minority voters a real chance to elect their preferred candidates.
So even though the specific legal rules might change, The underlying issues haven't gone away.
Not at all. We're still having these debates about how to ensure fairness and representation in our elections.
And I think DeGrande really highlights that even if a plan looks proportional on paper, it doesn't necessarily mean it's in the clear.
That's right. Just because the numbers add up doesn't mean you can ignore everything else. The courts are still going to look at all those other factors that we talked about, like the history of discrimination and whether there's evidence of racial polarization in voting.
So lawmakers really need to be careful and make sure they're not just going through the motions.
Absolutely. They need to be thinking about the real impact of their decisions on minority voters.
And can you give us a concrete example of how this plays out in practice? Like, what's the difference between proportionality and maximization in a real-world scenario?
Sure. Let's say you have a state where a minority group makes up about 30% of the voting age population.
Mm.
So proportionally, you might think, okay, they should have about 3 out of every 10 legislative districts where they're the majority.
3 out of 10 to match their share of the population.
Right. Now, DeGrande says the Voting Rights Act doesn't necessarily require the state to create exactly 3 of those districts. It could be 2, it could be 4, depending on all those other circumstances we talked about.
But having those 3 districts would be pretty strong evidence that the state is treating those voters fairly.
Exactly. Now, maximization, on the other hand, would mean the state would try to create as many majority-minority districts as humanly possible, even if it meant drawing some really weird-looking districts that don't make much sense geographically, or splitting up communities that have shared interests.
So it could end up backfiring and actually harming the very groups it's trying to help.
Exactly. And DeGrande said that's not what the Voting Rights Act is about.
It's not about maximizing. It's about ensuring equal opportunity.
That's the key.
So as we wrap up here, what's the big lesson that our listeners should take away from Johnson v. DeGrande?
I think the most important thing to remember is that the Voting Rights Act is all about making sure minority voters have a fair chance to participate in the political process. It's not about guaranteeing them a specific number of seats in the legislature or drawing districts in a way that benefits them at the expense of other voters.
It's about creating a level playing field.
Exactly. And DeGrande really laid out the framework for how we should think about that.
It's a landmark case that's still relevant today.
Absolutely.
So for all you law students out there, make sure you study this one closely because it touches on some of the most fundamental issues in our democracy.
Couldn't agree more.
Thanks for breaking it all down for us.
My pleasure. Anytime.
And for our listeners, thanks for joining us for another deep dive. We'll see you next time.
See ya.
As you continue your legal studies, think about how DeGrande's totality of circumstances test is used today in voting rights cases. It's a concept that's still being debated and interpreted, and it has a huge impact on how we ensure fair and equal representation in our country.
Keep learning, folks.
That's it for today. See you next time.